So today was a really hectic day because my father left to India about just an hour ago, and we got back from the airport just a little while ago. I didn't get a chance to prepare very much for the class, but I spoke to Mother Sangeeta earlier today, and she said she would be happy to give class. But now she's back to me instead. So. Yeah, it's a Gopi would like to see them. But we're in the company of Vaishnavas, all very learned and erudite in Krishna consciousness, so it shouldn't be a problem. And we always have Shri Prabhupada's comforts. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 We are reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 18, called The Perfection of Renunciation, text number 5. We spoke about the 5 factors of action last time, right? And today we speak about. Yeah, okay, so we continue right after that. Text number 16. Let's read 16, 17, and 18.
What's the next?
16. Chapter 18, text 16. Oh, should I put this on me? Okay, so we only have 3 verses, so let's read responsively, okay? Just for fun. Tatraivam sati kartaram. Atmanam kevalam tuyaha. Pashyatya krita buddhitvan. Nasa pashyati durmati. Translation. Therefore, one who thinks himself the only doer, not considering the 5 factors, is certainly not very intelligent and cannot see things as they are. Text 17. Yasya naham krito bhavo. Buddhir yasya na lipyate. Hatvapi sa imar lokan. Nahanti na nibadhyate. One who is not motivated by false ego, whose intelligence is not entangled, though he kills men in this world, does not kill, nor is he bound by his actions. And one more. Jnanam gnyeyam parijnata. Trividha karma chodana. Karanam karma karteti. Trividha karma sangraha. Knowledge, the object of knowledge, and the knower are the 3 factors that motivate action. The senses, the work, and the doer are the 3 constituents of action. Okay, let's read the purports to text 16 and 17. So, translation of 16 again. Therefore, one who thinks himself the only doer, not considering the five factors, is certainly not very intelligent and cannot see things as they are. A foolish person cannot understand that the Supersoul is sitting as a friend within and conducting his actions. Although the material causes are the place, the worker, the endeavor, and the senses, the final cause is the Supreme, the personality of Godhead. Therefore, one should see not only the four material causes, but the spiritual supreme efficient cause as well. One does not see the Supreme, thinks himself to be the doer. Next one. One who is not motivated by false ego, whose intelligence is not entangled, though he kills men in this world, does not kill, nor is he bound by his actions. Purport. In this verse, the Lord informs Arjuna that the desire not to fight arises from false ego. Arjuna thought himself to be the doer of action, but he did not consider the supreme sanction within and without. If one does not know that a super sanction is there, why should he act? But one who knows the instruments of work, himself as the worker, and the Supreme Lord as the supreme sanctioner, is perfect in doing everything. Such a person is never an illusion. Personal activity and responsibility arise from false ego and godlessness, or a lack of Krishna consciousness. Anyone who is acting in Krishna consciousness under the direction of the Supersoul or the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even though killing, does not kill. Nor is he affected, nor is he ever affected by the reaction of such killing. When a soldier kills under the command of a superior officer, he is not subject to be judged. But if a soldier kills on his own personal account, then he is certainly judged by a court of law. Om Jnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Melitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langhayate Girim Yat Kripatamaham Bande Shri Gurum Dinataranam Paramananda Madhavam. Aha! So, last time we discussed the five factors of action, and the point was that we, the doer, the karta, were only one of the five factors of action. And we talked about how every action is so influenced and controlled by these five things, right? Now, without looking, can someone name what the five are? Okay, name one. The performer. Someone else, too?
Endeavor. The endeavor.
The endeavor itself, good. Three, someone else?
He said the place.
Okay, good, the place. And someone else, the fourth?
Krishna,
the Supersoul. And a fifth person for the fifth. We've got performer, we've got place, we've got endeavor, we've got Krishna. I forget now. Oh, yeah. Yeah, the senses, the instruments of action. Okay. So we talked about the instrumental cause. We talked about, we gave the analogy of the potter and the wheel, remember? And how everything gets together there. Now, in these verses, Krishna tells us, kind of the point of why he was classifying action in that way. What was the point of giving that kind of classification? The point is very simple. Those five factors of action are there. Krishna's point is, don't think that you are the only cause of action. Right? In fact, don't think that you're the cause at all. Because you only have a very small role to play. You're not the doer, in other words. He mentioned the karta, and in some sense we are the doer, we are the performer. But we're not the performer in that we don't have control, actually, over our actions, or especially the results of our actions. So Krishna's saying, here, it's very strongly, therefore one who thinks himself the only doer is certainly not very intelligent and cannot see things as they are. Right? So if we take full credit for our activities, then Krishna is saying we're not very intelligent. He's saying akrita buddhitvan. He doesn't have very much intelligence. akrita buddhi. Not made intelligence. The intelligence is not very well formulated, right? Not very well made. So we're foolish, Krishna's basically saying. And last time I think we discussed at length as to how these factors do influence the circumstances. And we gave several analogies, studying or making money or investing in the stock market. So many different examples we gave, right, of how every activity, whatever the results might be, good or bad, cannot be credited to ourselves only, even if we think that we're the performer of the action. But here, Krishna is saying, okay, you don't take full credit for the actions. The credit, in fact, he's saying, the main cause, the main person to whom the credit must be shifted is whom? What's the, of the five causes, which is the one cause that's really being highlighted? Krishna, Krishna, right? Prabhupada makes it very clear in the purport to 16. Is Krishna's the one, the final cause, the fifth cause. In that verse last time, it was the daivam, right? The daivam, the divine factor in all the actions, that has to be given the most credit. He has to be given the most credit. Our problem is, Srila Prabhupada is saying, is that it's not that we only give credit to the performer. We do give credit to the other four factors, normally. We see, for example, we see the role of the endeavor in success for an action, right? We were talking about it last time. We see the role of the place. For example, we live in America and, you know, certain activities are much easier here than in other places. We see the role of the instruments. We see the role of the tools, of the senses that we use. So generally, if you talk to someone, then yeah, that's reasonable. We give credit to that. You know, it was nighttime. I couldn't see very well, right? So it was. I just had that experience because I drove at night for the first time coming back from the airport, and it's a huge difference, right? You're driving and you realize, my God, my senses are so imperfect. The tools I have to use are so imperfect, because when it comes nighttime, the whole thing completely changes. The whole scene looks very, very different, you know. So you realize, yes, only the doer, the performer, is not relevant here. The instruments are also very relevant. So that kind of everyone understands. But the one cause that we tend to leave out too often is daivam, is the final cause, the supreme cause, Krishna. Somehow or other, we can blame our actions or take credit for our actions, credit our actions to everything possible in this world. You know, something goes wrong. Well, you know, it was Chandrapu. He's the one who did it. He put me in that situation, and, you know, I had to. Or someone, you know, I rear-end someone and say, well, you know, he didn't have his lights on and I couldn't see his tail in lights, and so I rear-ended him. Whatever. Or if something good happens, yeah, you know, I worked hard, but it was also due to my parents, you know, they also helped. And even if we're a very generous person, we don't take all the credit ourselves. We say, you know, like authors at the beginning of books, it's very typical it's very standard to be very humble at the beginning of a book in the acknowledgments page or the introduction. And the author usually says, gives a list of all these. A book like this is the product of many hands, right? If it were not for such and such individuals, if it were not for Professor so and such, I could have never even come up with this topic. If it weren't for the publishers and the editors, the great people at Prentice Hall, this book would have never seen the light of the day. And of course, the main brunt of a project such as this is held on the is taken by our family members, right? The friends and stuff, and they've been through a lot. I sincerely thank my wife and my kids and my parents for all the hours that they've tolerated me sitting in front of the computer and not playing with them and so forth, right? So I'm grateful for them. And this book is dedicated to them. Ta-da. Any errors that remain in this book are solely my own responsibility, not the responsibility of others. Right? So most people in the right circumstances tend to be generous. And we realize the fact that, okay, the credit is not due all to me. Even if we think the credit is due mostly to me, but it looks good to give credit to others, so we try to do so. But even there, 99% of the time, we forget to give credit to the main person involved. The one cause without whose sanction nothing could have possibly happened. And that, of course, is the super soul, is Krishna, is the Lord in the heart, who's providing the inspiration for everything, who's allowing everything. How many prefaces, how many beginnings of books have you seen? How many speeches at the end, you know, graduation speeches have you heard, where someone stands up and says, I'd like to thank the Supreme Personality of Godhead, right? I'd like to thank, you know, whoever it is, Lord Jesus Christ. I'd like to thank the community of worshippers, my church, my temple. You know, God is kind of there, you know. When we lack something in life, then we remember God. And suddenly he says, you know, why didn't God give me this? It must be God's fault. But when it's time to give credit, then we tend to forget him very quickly. So that's kind of the main lesson Krishna is trying to convey to us here. He's not trying to instill in us the importance of the senses as causes of action or the place or whatever. That stuff is like, okay, if you recognize the location or the senses, good. If you don't, it's fine, you know. But the main crux here, the main problem is the fact that we don't recognize Krishna. That's the main issue. Now, how is Krishna the cause of actions? How is Krishna the cause, the final cause? Prabhupada here calls him the final cause and also the efficient cause. Now, does anyone know what the efficient cause means? What would you think it means? Right. Yeah, I mean that's the primary meaning of efficient that we use today, right? That you get the most amount of work done, results with the least amount of trouble or endeavor, right?
I was going to say the final piece is that it suits the end. It suits the end. In other words, the final cause is ultimately the satisfying end.
Okay. Right. Yeah. Now, just going back to the first thing you said, the efficient cause, efficiency meaning getting the most done with the least amount of endeavor, least amount of work, right? So Krishna's, in that sense, he's the efficient cause. And we can see very clearly how efficient he is in everything he does. With how little endeavor Krishna's able to get so much work done, right? That's basically what we understand by efficiency. The Germans are very efficient. They're known for, you know, streamlining things. No hitches, no red tape, no bureaucracy. Everything goes through. The Dutch say they're even more efficient than the Germans. So they're very good at that. But and we see how efficient Krishna is, right? With the least amount of endeavor, right? What does Krishna have to do to put on this huge show of this material world? Millions of planets and, you know, stars and living entities and, you know, look at all what Krishna's doing, first of all, to see the efficiency, right? Look at all what he's doing. We talked about this last time a little bit also, how there's millions and millions and billions and trillions of living entities traversing their different pathways in this material world. We've all got our karmic histories. We've all got our karma, which brings us together, and there's action and reaction. We go into a particular situation and certain people are there and we interact with them. And all our karma, what we're supposed to get, is all planned out by Krishna for every living entity in this planet. You go out onto the street, you walk on the grass, there's millions of living entities just in that little patch of grass, right? Little bugs, blades of grass, worms, everyone there under our feet. And all those living entities are being kept tabs on. They're all got their trajectories on this earth. on this planet. All these universes, they're turning, all these planets are turning on their axes, they're turning around the sun, the stars are burning, the wind is blowing, the rain is falling, this whole universe is taking place. All this is being done. And what does Krishna have to do to keep it going? To get it started, to keep it going? You can see what he's doing there, right? What's he doing? He blows his flute. It's actually true. It's how the Srimad Bhagavatam describes Krishna, the original personality of Godhead. Ishvara Paramaha Krishna. Satchidananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govinda Sarvakarana Karanam. He's the cause of all causes. Sarvakarana Karanam. And you think, well, if he's the cause of all causes, he probably has to work really hard. It's just like in a company, a multinational corporation. The top guy is known as the CEO. He's the president and the CEO of the company, the chief executive officer. So he's the man at the top. Generally, these CEOs have really crazy lives. They get huge multi-million dollar bonuses. But in order to get that, they actually spend the majority of their life, you know where? On the airplane. On the airplane, they spend their time flying from place to place and place, and long early mornings and late nights. Successful people in this world, people who work hard and get up early and, you know, work. So this is generally the case in the material world. The higher you go, the harder you have to work to get there and then to maintain that position in a competitive world. And the higher the stakes are, the more you have to lose. Krishna is exactly the opposite. He's at the top. He's number one. Ishvara Parama Krishna Satya Anadir Adir Govinda Sarva Karana Karana. He's the cause of all causes. And he's at the very top, and therefore he has to do the very, very least in this world. He has absolutely nothing to lose. The stakes are completely low for him. Nothing to lose, nothing that he can lose, because everything is his. So he's completely relaxed, no work at all. And the Srimad Bhagavatam describes that at the beginning of creation, when the Lord has a desire to create this material world, there's only one thing that he needs to do. He blows on his flute. He plays his flute. And the sound of his flute is the Gayatri Mantra. It's the sound of the Gayatri. That Gayatri Mantra enters the heart of the first created being, Brahma. And from that, Brahma receives inspiration as to how to populate and create this whole universe, this whole material world. In his form as Mahavishnu, he has to do a little bit more work. He has to actually lie there, and what does he do? Breathe. He breathes the universes in and out. Krishna plays, he plays the flute. Mahavishnu doesn't play so much. His life is a little bit more difficult. Instead of playing, he gets to sleep and he breathes. And as he sleeps, all the universes go out and come in. They go out and they come in. In the form of Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, maybe a little bit more. Brahma comes out from his navel. And he's there involved a little bit with Brahma. When the demigods come to him and they pray for his help, as when he's lying on the ocean of milk. And they say, the earth is overburdened, please come and help. Then he says, okay, I'll come. He sends a message to the heart of Brahma, and he appears. So a little bit more. But you see the extent to which Krishna has to work. Almost zilch, almost nothing. Yeah.
So, Brahma and his representative, Joshua, everybody is a form of Krishna. They are from Krishna. So, indirectly, Krishna is working.
Yeah, so this is the thing. Krishna works, but only through his energies, through his Shakti. And the nice thing about working through the Shakti is that you don't have to personally get involved. You can kind of, like you're saying, get it done indirectly. It's like, we can take that same analogy again of a CEO or of a president. He sits in his office, and you see this more in India actually. The top manager, he won't lift a finger. You know, if something needs to be done, he, you know, calls someone and someone shows up. And he says, do this, do that, do this, do that, you know, and he's just sitting there. The next guy goes in and says, oh, this is the problem, we got to do this. And again, he, you know. So this is kind of a hands-off approach. This is Krishna's style of leadership. Hands off. Yeah.
Let's give you an example. I have
yeah.
And so I get maybe my daughter. So I need you to wash my clothes. So actually I'm giving her some I need it done, so the work I've done is to give the instruction. And then she actually goes to bed, puts the detergent in, turns it on, and then the washing machine is doing a different action.
Right.
So she's not actually washing.
Yeah.
The washing machine.
That's a very, very good analogy. Right. Yeah, like a machine. Bhagavad-gita Krishna says it, yantra rudhani maya. This whole material world is turning. Maya dhyakshena prakriti suyate sa characharam. Hetunanena konte jagat viparivartate. The whole earth is turning. Maya dhyakshena prakriti suyate. Prakriti, material energy, his energy, is turning the whole world. Right? Is making everything work. But maya dhyakshena, it's under my adhyaksha. Krishna's the leader. Just like a machine. It's a very good analogy. When we put stuff in the washing machine and turn it on, and the washing machine washes it, it's actually I'm washing clothes. We say, right? I did the laundry today. I did the laundry doesn't necessarily mean like in the old days, you know? It means you put it in the washing machine. But you still did the laundry. Why? Because the washing machine is an energy of yours. It's an extension of yours. You bought it with your money, you set it up in your house, and then it works for you. You pay the bill for the water and the electricity. And it washes clothes for you. So Krishna's kind of like this. He's got a whole system set up. Instead, he doesn't have to lift a finger. All he can do is just enjoy, is play. That play is called Leela. So in that way, Krishna is very efficient. Right? This was the original point we were talking about. Krishna is very efficient. The most amount of work with the least amount of labor. But there's another kind of an older English meaning of the word efficient. And it basically kind of means effective. And effective, again, not in an older sense of the word effective. If an efficient cause is that cause which produces the effect, who effects something, not affects, not affects, but effect. One who causes the effect is the effective cause or the efficient cause. In other words, Krishna is the ultimate cause. The word, he's the final cause. The final cause or the efficient cause? In this Prabhupada uses them both interchangeably. The final cause, the efficient cause. So in other words, when you trace all the causes back, the last cause you go to, the final cause you get to, is Krishna, is God. That by definition is God. If you were to ask, well, who is God? There's many ways to define God. One of the ways of defining God, by definition, he's the first cause. This was Aristotle's definition of God, or actually his proof of God. He said, if you look around in this world, everything has a cause. Right? Whatever you do has some kind of a preceding cause to it. I do something, well, it's, you know, it's because of this, it's because of that. Ultimately, whatever I do is because I was given birth by my parents, and they were given birth by their parents, and they were given birth. And so everything you can kind of change, you can trace to find a cause. Or movement. Every movement has something that's moving it. There's a mover for every movement. He said, if you trace this chain all the way back, then there is a point at which you arrive at the unmoved mover, he called it. That person who puts everything in motion, but is not put into motion himself by anyone. The unmoved mover. And he said, you have to have an unmoved mover, otherwise you get an infinite regress. You keep going back infinitely. And that leads to absurdity, logical absurdity. It makes no sense. It's like in programming. If you get an infinite do loop or something like that, right? An if-then statement that doesn't break at any point, it just the computer keeps and you have to control alt delete, you know, stop it, because it, you know, it's just infinite. It doesn't work. It's an infinite loop. So he says the universe is not like that. That's absurd. It's a fault in the programming. You have to have an original cause, someone who sets the program into motion. And that, he says, by definition is God. In other words, he says, whoever that guy is, I define him, that is God for me.
Based on what you're saying, that Krishna is the first cause, even the spiritual cause. So if a desire manifests, leave the spiritual cause. Right?
Yeah.
Is that attributed also, or is it a portion or a percentage that we take in light of that, that here's this thought, this thought had to come from the beginning of that meaning. So now that we are now, now we're going to give you an opportunity. And so a number of things are already set in motion. And as you're saying, you're having all these loops.
Yeah.
And at some point, Krishna is the person at the keyboard, and he does the whole thing. Would that be fair?
Yeah, I mean, what you're describing basically is just another version of the problem of evils, what we discussed last time, right? Where does that original desire for rebellion come from? And the thing is, ultimately, yes, it's coming from God, right? Krishna ultimately gets the blame for everything and the credit for everything because he is the first cause. But it's not in our interest to shift the blame, because it's kind of like, you know, I can go out and do something terrible. And then I can say, well, I can blame it on my parents and say, look, they gave birth to me, right? If they hadn't given birth to me, then I wouldn't have done this. And it's a fact, right? But once again, no court of law will ever hold that as a valid defense, right? Because, you know, once that cause has produced you, he's given you a certain amount of independence that he or she's not willing to take away, right? So Krishna's produced us and he's given us some amount of independence. Ultimately, yes, everything's coming from Krishna. But Krishna would much rather see us misuse our independence than take that independence away. Right? Now, this is an important point to remember. This is kind of a very important aspect of getting our head around the problem of evil. Is for Krishna, our free will is very, very important. It's very sacred. And he would, once again, much rather see us misuse that free will and suffer rather than take that free will away from us. Because if he takes our free will away, then he's basically destroying us. He's destroying what he created. We're no longer independent. We're no longer individuals. Right? We're robots. And that's Krishna will never ever do that. Even whatever that means as far as suffering goes. You have, sorry.
Since Krishna is the cause of all causes, I wasn't even thinking along the lines of this evil. Because you can't associate that with Krishna. So if he is the cause for the desire for us to leave the Buddha, then there must be a final or efficient conclusion to that. And that must be satisfying to Krishna to see someone leave. And he knows the time to do that. Somehow or another, the purpose of that must ultimately be for Krishna's pleasure. And we eventually, maybe at the end, come to the conclusion that my purpose is only for Krishna's pleasure. So this, the act of leaving, the act of coming back, actually satisfies it. At some point. So, I mean, you have to come to that conclusion because it doesn't make sense to leave.
Yeah,
even have a desire manifest because he sets all these things along all these little things on the pathway to actually bring us back with the word yoga or yoga or the word religion, we need to do more. And religion needs to do more. So this whole idea of pulling things back. So and then he sets all these things in place. So I just wanted to pull it in.
I'd be a little bit still hesitant to say that our departure from the spiritual world is satisfying to Krishna. Certainly our return is, and certainly the whole process of getting us back is, because it's a success. But our departure in the first place, I don't know, everything's there for Krishna's pleasure. But yet, in that course of pleasure, you know, while there is a satisfaction of getting a living entity back, there might be some dissatisfaction in the process of achieving that satisfaction. You know, overall, there may be satisfaction from Krishna, but I would still be hesitant to say that he's actually satisfied to see us leave. You know,
I don't mean it, because I think in some sense there are devotees who play the role of deacons.
Yeah, yeah.
And Krishna is acting in a certain way.
Right.
And I'm looking at all the small players who may support these big demons. And I would consider us like small players. We're not even big demons.
Right.
We're very small in nature. But if you look at how his story is always glorified, how he can take someone who's a complete rogue, complete drug addict, complete this, that, and the other, and he's completely transformed, and how that action affects others who are watching that, who may not be as debased, but they can actually get some, extrapolate, I see why I should swim this way. So everything has a final effect.
Yeah.
And so that was what I'm thinking. He says, okay, this is going to happen.
Yeah.
But let the conclusion benefit me.
Yeah. So in other words, everything has a purpose. Everything has a purpose, and Krishna always fulfills his purpose. His purpose is never frustrated. Jen, who are you? It's okay.
You mentioned that action, the credit should go to these five factors, but why the reaction on this to the five factors?
That's a very good question. Perhaps we can answer it in two ways. One is by saying that when we do get the reaction, it's always given in account to how much we're at fault, meaning in accordance with how much responsibility we have. In other words, for example, location is one of the factors, right? If we're thrown into a situation over which we have very little control, and there we do something wrong, right? Then Krishna takes account of the fact that you were literally forced to perform the action. In other words, depending on the amount of freedom we have or the importance of the karta in that particular action, Krishna will give us the reaction based on that. He'll take the other factors into account. You see what I mean? It's not that we get 100% of the reaction, even though we're only a fifth of the cause. If I have an accident driving, right, and it's nighttime, and it's raining, and the guy in front of me, stopped very suddenly, and whatever it might be, right, the child ran out into the street, and I had to brake really hard. The court will take those factors into account, and the decision will be mitigated. I'll still be responsible for rear-ending, because the rear-ender is basically always at fault. If you hit the car in front of you, you're kind of you've got some blame. But the court will very likely take into account mitigating conditions, mitigating factors in the judgment, right? So the process of karma is not blind or ruthless. In other words, Krishna takes factors into account. For example, if you do something intentionally or unintentionally, if you're walking down the street and you see a nest of ants and you go, wow, and you jump right into it, right? Then that's going to get a very heavy reaction, because the karta was extremely important in that action, right? That willpower, I want to smash the ants. If you happen to be walking down the street and you go, oops, oh my God, I stepped into it and you didn't notice, right? Then the reaction will be less. Why? Because the location that you were in, adhishtana, the senses, your lack of perfect senses, you weren't looking on the ground, you can't see everywhere all the time. All those things affected the fact that you stepped into it, you see? So, in other words, it's not the case that we get 100% of the reaction all the time. Rex, bro? Oh, sorry.
I wonder, like, when you talk about putting pieces together, it seems like what you were saying a little bit earlier, then Krishna very much honors our quote unquote choice.
Mm.
It seems if I'm listening correctly, we only have two choices.
Mm.
One is to follow and be a servant of Krishna and not come here in the first place. And the other one is, once we make this other choice, then we get into the samsara, the five factors, the karmic reactions, etc., etc. And why the variations may be there, that's still just part of that same choice we just made.
Yes, yes.
It seems like we only have two choices.
Yes.
And if we want to get back to the, maybe the original choice, then we need then to just go through the process of doing the things that we need to do to be discerned.
Yeah, exactly. That's very true. In other words, we are bound to be a servant. We're bound to be servants. That's our natural position, our constitutional position is as servants. Whatever we try to do, whether we like it or not, we will be servants. Our only choice, like you're saying, is shall I serve the Lord's material energy, Maya, or shall I serve the Lord's spiritual energy? Shall I serve Krishna, or shall I serve my senses? It's basically, that's the only choice we have. And you're very right in that once you make that choice, you're kind of at the mercy of the people whom you chose to serve. Right? So if we choose to serve the material world, material energy, we choose to serve our senses, we're at their mercy. And then once again, like we were saying last time, we shouldn't complain if we get into trouble, if we suffer. Right? We made the choice to serve a very thankless and ruthless master or mistress. That was our choice. We were offered two positions, and we chose the foolish one, right? But for if we want to choose the spiritual kingdom, then Krishna says this in Bhagavad Gita, right? He says, "Daivi hiesha gunamayi mama maya duratkaya, maam eva ye prapadyante mayam etam tarantite." He says, Mahatmanas tumam partha daivim prakriti mashita. Those who says, he says, who are mahatmas, who are broad-minded, they are daivim prakriti mashrita. They are protected by my internal energy. And those who are not, prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvasha, those who make the other choice, they get kicked around by the material energy. And that's kind of our condition. In one place, Srila Prabhupada says that the living entity has a choice to be either bewildered by the material energy of the Lord, or to be bewildered by the spiritual energy. But we must be bewildered. Mm-hmm. We're not meant to know what's going on, ultimately. We're not meant to be in control. We're meant to be bewildered. Right now we're bewildered in the material world. But if you look in the spiritual world, also everyone's bewildered. Right? Look at Mother Yashoda. She's running after Krishna to try to punish him for stealing butter. And she thinks Krishna is her own son, her own child. Right? A little boy who needs to be disciplined. Right? She's bewildered. But she's happy being bewildered like that. That's the natural position of bewilderment. She's under the control of Krishna's spiritual energy. Or the cowherd friends who climb on Krishna's shoulders and snatch food from his mouth. They're also bewildered. But that's the Lord's yogamaya. That's the difference between mahamaya and yogamaya. Mahamaya is the bewilderer in this material world, and Yogamaya is the bewilderer in the spiritual world. So, that's very true, very good. That's the choice we have to make. Once we realize that we're not the doer, we can only make this choice. As long as we think we're in control, we can't make this choice. And this is the point of this verse that we've been reading. This is kind of our problem. We're in the ocean, and we think we can swim across. The first thing we have to do in order to get out of our situation, get it out of the ocean, is to realize that I'm in trouble. This is the first thing, in order to help someone, the first thing that needs to happen is a person needs to realize that they need help. You can't, if there's someone, an alcoholic, completely drunk, you can't help that person unless the person recognizes the fact that they need help. Right? Otherwise, most alcoholics say, no, I only have a few drinks, you know. It's only once in a while. I don't drink all the time. And they might be stone drunk, but they still say that. It's only when you recognize, yes, I need help. that's when you can actually help the person. So this is our problem. We're in the material ocean, and we're being kicked around by Maya's waves. And still we think, no, I'm in control. I've got the situation figured out. Right? I've only got another 10,000 miles to swim, but if I keep going at this pace, I should get to the other side. And there we are trying to swim. And we don't see that we're completely under the control of the waves. We swim a few yards, and some wave comes and throws us right back. And we turn around and swim the other way, and Maya comes and throws us back. Like this, we're being thrown. The only thing we have to do is say, look, Krishna, I need help. Pull me out. And Krishna will come on the back of Garuda, Garuda Skandamarupya. He'll pull us out, and what will he do? Drop us into another ocean. This is the ocean of love of God. Premambulhi, it's called. The ocean of pure love of God, in which one is constantly singing. Kallola Magno Muhur. The six Goswamis are described. That constantly they were diving and swimming and drowning in this ocean of love of God. So we have two choices. We can drown in the material ocean or drown in the spiritual ocean. But we're meant to drown. That's nice. The Jaya Vijaya, for example, they were also Leela. You know, they're it's pleasing to Krishna because they come down, like you were saying, they take the role of demons and they fight it out, you know. So that's satisfying to Krishna. Right.
And the action reaction game for saying that why we get the effect. I guess in the next one, like the 16th verse or 17th verse, like Prabhupada said, so we get the reaction, so we get the karma. As long as we don't realize that it passes, right? But for a person acting in Krishna consciousness, there is no reaction at all. So we are not actually getting the action. When we acknowledge everything is Krishna, then Prabhupada says, oh, did it work? Yes, because of Krishna. So he's, even the reaction is going to Krishna, the credit of the action. Didn't work, something is going to Krishna. So when we don't realize the fifth point, then we always get the reaction.
Exactly. Very good. That was the second way of answering the question, which I was gonna. We kind of went off on a tangent, but just
On his question, I was thinking also an answer. Another way to explain that we are we never met, but we have an accent, right? And then I see, wow, he has our nicknames. I have our nicknames. And I'm mad when I get out of the car. I'm approaching him and I see these nicknames, right? And as soon as I see these nicknames, I fall over and I feel my best. And then I may realize at that point, because of Krishna's mercy, that he gave me some association, right? So even though, like you said, you may jump on the ants by accident, someone sent the ants, someone made concrete, someone supplied the earth, someone put trees there. Right? There's so many other things that are happening that our little portion is so small. And that's why I was getting back to this point about us leaving, taking this act of choice to leave. And more so that Krishna, okay, you're leaving, but this is going to satisfy my interest that you're leaving. Okay, I don't want you to go, okay, but you leaving is ultimately going to satisfy my interest. And because this one is going to come, and he's going to endure so many auspices, and eventually you're going to hear this message, Mm-hmm. Then you're going to come back, and then it actually glorifies him. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to have some control, right? Mm-hmm. And then you may be glorified because of your activity. Mm-hmm. So ultimately, you know, in the whole chain of things,
yeah,
everything is going to come out mm-hmm. to the satisfaction of the final goal, Krishna. Right. Even the situation we see that's bad, right? We see that, devotees see that, and these bad things are actually Krishna's attention. How he pays attention to this is mostly for us, so that we can make further advancement. So, okay. So again, even all these actions are going, we're just seeing our one part. We may have pulled the trigger, right? We didn't make the bullet. We didn't make the gun, right?
So that's like we said, that's one way of answering the question, in that, yes, the karma will be mitigated based on what percentage of responsibility we had in the action. But the second way of answering, which Srinivas Prabhu was mentioning, which is also very, very important, is that the reason we get the reaction is because although we are only 1/5 of the cause, we think that we're the total cause. We believe that we're the total cause, right? So when we actually, you know, when I get my degree, right, the reason I'll get the full reaction, whether good or bad, for that, is because I think that I did it all my own, right? So because of this false ego, Krishna's blaming it on this ahankara. We're thinking I'm the full cause. Krishna says, okay, if you think you're the real cause of this action, then you take the consequences, right? Then you deal with the result of this action. Then don't blame me, right? So Prabhupada is saying that, okay, the way to get out of this then is to realize that ultimately we're not the cause. Ultimately the real cause is Krishna. And as soon as we realize that fact, then Krishna says, okay, you understand now. I'll take responsibility for it. I'll take blame for it, right? So it's also due to our misconception. Krishna's very kind of very fair, and he says, okay, you want credit, then you deal with the consequences, right? I won't do that. So this is the difference between a devotee and a non-devotee. Is a devotee understands everything is ultimately done by the will of Krishna and tries to do his actions in will with Krishna. And that's why a devotee is free of all reaction. A devotee doesn't. And Krishna is saying in the next verse we read, that even though he may kill, he does not actually kill. He's getting back to the to the point at hand with Arjuna, right? Once in a while you find in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna he returns to the basic, the bottom line, which he wants to get Arjuna to fight. So he's put it in your Satyadin again. He said, so the point of this is, if you understand that I'm the final cause and I'm standing here and telling you to fight, I'm standing here telling you to kill, then if you do so, you won't be the cause. But till you think that actually it's you doing it. This was Arjuna's problem, right? He was thinking, my God, I can't do this, I can't do that, I can't do this, I can't do that. And Krishna's answer was completely cutting it at the root. Krishna comes there and says, look, it's not a question of what you should do or should not do. The whole problem is that you think you're doing it, right? It's not a question of what you can and cannot do. Why do you think that you're the one doing it? You're not doing it at all. He says, nimitta matra bhavasavya sachin. Says, O Arjun, simply be nimitta matra, simply be an instrument in my hands. And once you realize you're an instrument, then don't worry, I take the reactions. All these people here on this battlefield have already been killed by me. Kalo smi sarvakshayakrit pravidho. I'm time I am, Krishna says, the great destroyer of all these worlds. They're all dead already. But if you think that you're killing them, then you'll have to deal with the reaction. You shouldn't have to, because I did it. But if you think that you're doing it, if you want the credit, then you deal with the reaction of killing all these people, which is a really, really heavy reaction. Now, let's go back to the original point we were making, right, of how the supreme cause is Krishna. And we mentioned the efficient cause. Krishna is the efficient cause. Right? That's one type of cause in this creation. A second type of cause is the material cause, or the upadana karana, it's called. The substantive cause. The stuff out of which it's made. Just like the pot again. The one major cause is the potter and the tools he uses, the action. But the second cause of the pot is the clay itself. That's called upadana karana, the material cause, the substantive cause. Krishna is both the efficient cause and the material cause of this creation. In other words, the creator of this world and the stuff out of which this creation is made, both are Krishna, but indirectly through his energy, like the washing machine example. But Krishna is dealing with both. Now, this realization, we said, of knowing the difference between realizing that I'm not the performer, I'm not the doer, I'm not the cause, but Krishna is the final cause. This is the difference between a devotee of the Lord and a non-devotee. This is someone who's a Mahatma and a Duratma, a broad-minded soul and a narrow-minded soul. The difference between them is one sees the supreme cause, Krishna, and understands everything's coming to him. Now, how to apply this in our own lives? How to apply this practically speaking? Because it's one thing to understand kind of theoretically that the whole world is turning based on Krishna's desire, and everything happens by Krishna's will, and so forth. But it's a very different thing to actually live this in our lives. Because normally in our lives, we do take responsibility and understand ourselves as the cause of what we do. In this world, we go through life making plans. The most important function of the mind is making plans. The mind is always scheming somehow or other. The senses have some desire, and the mind makes plans. Whether it's little plans or big plans. Whether it's to, okay, now the plan is that we're going to finish this lecture, take prasadam, and go home. Right? That might be a short-term plan. Or whether it's a long-term plan. One day I want to do this and I want to do that and I want to, you know, I want to get a new degree, I want to get a better job, or, you know, I want to develop my character, I want to get the house all set up properly. Whatever it might be, I want to get my kitchen remodeled. We have short-term plans, mid-term plans, long-term plans. Plans, this is what we do in the material world. This whole idea of planning is grounded on this basic premise that I am the doer, kartaham, I am the performer of the action. In other words, the plan I made, I can act upon that plan and I can effect, I can have an effect. In other words, I am the efficient cause, I am the effective cause, I can effect. So the whole idea of plan is grounded on the fact that we're taking Krishna's role to some degree or another. Krishna is the efficient cause. Krishna is causing the effect. But we like to take that ourselves. The whole nature of a devotee, the life approach of a devotee, is that, yes, he makes plans and that you can't actually get anything done without making a plan. But he's constantly trying. The devotee is not really making plans per se, but trying to figure out and work according to Krishna's plan. This is the difference between a devotee and a non-devotee. Everyone in this world spends their time making plans. A devotee spends his time trying to figure out what Krishna's plan is and trying to act according to that. That's not a very easy thing, figuring out what Krishna's plan is. And that's why a devotee's life is as much hard work as a non-devotee's life is. Right? You can think, well, if you don't have to make plans, you don't have to plan for anything, you don't have to set any goals, you don't have to work, that's an easy life. You know, it's kind of a relaxed, laid-back, ambition-free life. You're just going to sit there and, you know, wait for the next day to happen. No, not at all. Because figuring out Krishna's plan is really, really difficult. It's much more difficult than making your own plan. Right? Because Krishna's not very open with his plans. he sometimes doesn't let us know very soon what his plan is. And things can get very nervous, very difficult when you don't know what Krishna's plan is. This is the cause of so much anxiety in this world. Krishna has something, he's got a plan, he's got something in store, but we don't realize what that plan is. And so we become really worried, very nervous. What am I going to do? What am I going to do? So that's one problem. Krishna doesn't tell our plan. So sometimes Krishna has a plan, right? But it's not the straight path, you know? It's kind of like Krishna is just standing there. We look at our life, we look at our future, we look at, and we think, my God, as far as I can see, there's nothing ahead. It's hopeless. You know, where am I going? There's nothing. It's like the road is empty, and you get really, what am I going to do? How am I going to? It's like, and we don't realize that Krishna's there already waiting for us with a plan, but he's just waiting around the corner. Right? And because our vision, we cannot see around corners, therefore we think, my God, God's got no plan for me. There's nothing I can do. There's no hope. What am I going to do? It's because we don't have the power to see around corners. Krishna does. And so he's waiting there. He says, look, you're assuming that you're going to go down the straight path. What you don't realize is that there's a right turn coming up. And I'm standing right there with a plan in hand. So sometimes Krishna's plan is not very clear because of that. He doesn't tell us, or we can't see around corners or whatever. That's one problem. The second problem is sometimes the plan is very clear, but we don't like it. It's not the plan we had in mind. Right? So, you know, we had intended to make a left turn, and Krishna's plan is a right turn. And then it's like, no, this way, no, that way. And therefore, sometimes we decide to go against Krishna's plan. Because we think, look, I mean, this plan, obviously, there's so much gain here, right? But Krishna wants me to go that way. Why would he want me to do that? And we justify. Said, oh, I'll go this way a little while and then I'll come back that way. Right? Let me do this for some time, then I'll follow Krishna's plan after that. So that gets us in trouble. That makes problems for us. So both problems are there. Krishna doesn't often, he hides his plan, he doesn't tell us. Well, why would Krishna hide his plan? Why would Krishna not kind of stand there right in front of us and wave and say this way, you know? Yeah, that's a very good point, right? It'll be very easy for us to take credit. Often the way Krishna works is that he will arrange things in such a way that every endeavor we make in a situation will fail, right? Everything we do will collapse. And then we think we're at our last straw, it's the end of the string, it's going to end, God's not helping me, I've tried everything possible. Right? There's no solution, no pathway open, I've tried every single pathway. And just at the end, Krishna will come and say, ta-da, here's the solution. And then we're forced to admit that it wasn't us. Right? We're forced because we tried every way and it didn't work. This happens, so, for example, with Rath Yatra, so many times in the past. We're trying to arrange Rath Yatras, and it's not happening, this is going wrong. And until the last minute, there's problem after problem after problem. And then, usually it happens almost every time. My father can tell this experience very well. Within the last week before Rath Yatra, everything falls into place. We've been stressing and worrying and trying to hold for months in advance, you know, and we think, my God, we're trying to serve Krishna, right? And yet Krishna's giving so many obstacles. What's this? You know, what's the point? I'm not doing this for us. We're trying to serve Krishna, and yet, you know, things aren't working out. You know? But at the end, in the last 1 week, everything will fall into place. And it's just Lord Jagannath, right? He's showing, look, I'm the Lord of the universe. I'm doing this, right? Don't think you're doing this. I'll do it, and I do it when I like to, in my own time. Yeah? Yeah.
We are meant to envision the results and to understand the results for us.
Right.
So it's like he doesn't have to show the plans to us.
Okay.
He knows what the result will be, and it's going to be good for my people here. So and we are not meant to envision.
Very good. Very good. So that's the other thing. Krishna doesn't tell us his plan because he's not obliged to, right? He doesn't have to. Prabhupada, he calls Krishna the transcendental autocrat. Right? You understand what the word autocrat means? It's like a dictator. Right? So Krishna is a transcendental autocrat. He's number one. Right? There's no one to challenge his position. He's created everything. He's got nothing to lose. No one can ever take anything away from him. And we're all created for his pleasure. Right? So he's not under any obligation to tell us anything. Right? He's not under no obligation to set up a committee and inform his team players as to what's happening. He does as he likes, right? He's the autocrat. He can hand things down. That's his free will. And as little guys, the problem is, even if he were to tell us his plan, we might not be able to see it, because we don't have this ability to see everything like Krishna does. Right? So we see things in a narrow way. This is what's coming up. This is what, you know, I want. This is what's good for me. But Krishna's not seeing just that. He's seeing what's good for every living entity in this world. And that kind of broad vision, if we try to see what Krishna sees, whew, our head would spin like anything. We couldn't keep track of anything. Someone else had their hand up. Yeah.
I was just thinking that you've done all the study at school, PhD, and you're in a circle of a bunch of individuals, and they're all that's very impressive. But what you should do, they start telling you what you should do. You already have everything that's planned laid out. It's almost as if you're dense. You mentioned that we are compete with Krishna. And I think that's the core reason why he doesn't reveal the plan. It's because we're always trying to compete.
Right.
We think, well, no, we should do it this way. And it happens to be because of our false ego.
Okay.
We're still on this platform that we're control.
Yeah.
We're still on this platform that we're control. And so he purposely, as you said, and you laid it out very nicely, let me let you fail first. And when you figure out that you can't control anything, and of course that's also part of our design, and then you will actually act as a
right. Okay, so very good. That's the third. We first reason Rex said was because Krishna doesn't reveal his plan because we would take credit otherwise, right? And Krishna wants to make clear to his devotees or to everyone that that ultimately he's helping out, right? Secondly, he's not obliged to, right? He doesn't have to show his plan. And then thirdly, as Chandraprabhu said, is because Krishna doesn't reveal his plan because we're competition, right? We're trying to compete with Krishna. Now, it's just like in any company, right? Which company will tell its plan to competition, right? Will Hewlett-Packard go out and tell what their plan is for the next laser printer to Xerox or to Lexmark or to Dell? Never. In fact, they do everything possible not to let them know the plan, right? Shred papers, make sure employees are faithful, make sure there's no leaks, and da-da-da, right? You don't tell your plan to competition. Would America ever reveal its military plans to Russia or to China? Never, right? You never reveal plans to competition. We're competition for Krishna, right? Not in any real sense, but we think we compete, right? So why should Krishna tell us this plan? But there's another very important reason Krishna doesn't tell us our plan, especially for devotees, why he sometimes doesn't, he's not forthcoming with his plans. So for the enjoyment of the pleasure of being saved by Krishna or by receiving help from Krishna. Yeah, that's very nice also.
It diminishes your service. This is what's going to happen to my
father. Yeah, so you have to, you're less
enthusiastic.
Yeah, and don't have to, it's okay. Exactly. Okay. Very good. Very good. That's an excellent reason also. So he's giving us the option to try out things also. If Krishna gives his plan, it can sometimes be very intimidating, and we might not have the ability to do what we want also. You know, it's kind of like if a really big guy shows up and says, "So my plan is we'll both go." You know, and it's kind of like, "Okay, yep, we'll do that." You know, it's kind of you follow that plan, right? So Krishna doesn't want to do that for us. He's honoring our free will. What else? What else? There's
Krishna reveals his plan, there will be no karma. If we follow his plan.
Yeah, but we always have the choice to go against his plan, right? Which we're all doing anyway, or most of us.
Yeah.
But it's kind of more closely related to what Rex was saying earlier. Not just the credit aspect, but yeah, go ahead.
When it also be Krishna's belief, when we fail, it's to our benefit to fail, so we're doing it out of his mercy.
The fact that we, yeah.
It's true. To give the devotees glory, not just to give them credit.
Yeah, it doesn't reveal his plan?
Yeah.
This is the opposite.
Right. Srila Prabhupada, he did.
He chooses his devotees.
He makes his plan manifest through his devotees or through his agents. Yes, that's a very relevant point for us in our own lives. Right? Is sometimes Krishna's plan is made clear not by Krishna himself coming in our dream or, you know, dropping an apple from the sky or something. You know, it's because his devotees or the association we have or the circumstances we find ourselves in, Krishna makes our plan clear like that. The other thing I was getting to was sometimes Krishna hides his plan in order to increase our faith, right? And this is kind of related to what Rex was saying. When we realize that we have to give credit to Krishna, and in the end we realize that Krishna helps us, it increases our faith. It forces us to depend on Krishna. We try all our different options, we make our own plans. In the end, Krishna shows up with his own plan, and it works. It gets us out of the situation. And our faith increases, that yes, Krishna is always there to protect me. That's why you find that Krishna often leaves his plan or his solution till the very last minute in a devotee's life. When Prahlad was pushed off of the cliff by Hiranyakashipu, right, to die, Krishna wasn't there standing up at the top to hold him. Right? Where did Krishna catch him? At the bottom, right? And you think, well, why does he allow his devotee to, you know, it's such a torturous journey down the hill, you know, thinking, oh my God, will Krishna catch me, Krishna catch me. Of course, Prahlad had solid faith, so he knew Krishna would protect him. This is why he kind of willingly was pushed off the cliff. Right? But for many of us in our lives, right, Krishna often waits till the last minute to show his plan, to reveal it. And the reason is it because it forces us to increase our dependence on him, our faith in him. Krishna waits till the last straw when we think everything's going to fail and it's going to be, this is the end. And Krishna says, nope, I'm right here. I'm waiting at the bottom. Krishna always waits at the bottom and never at the top. And this is for our own benefit. This is for our own good. It's kind of like one of these faith-building exercises or team-building exercises. You stand up, you get a guy to stand behind you, right? And well, you put two people together and say, you're friends, yes. You trust each other? Say, yeah. You really? You trust each other? Say, yeah. Said, okay, you know, Srinivas Prabhu, Chandra Prabhu. Right? Chandra Prabhu is standing behind Srinivas Prabhu. Say, now Srinivas, now fall backwards. He'll catch you, right? That's a very difficult thing to do. I don't know if you've ever tried it. It sounds easy, but it's really difficult. Even you know, I remember as a little kid doing this with my father, and you know, of all people, you think your dad can catch you, right? For a child, father's strong and he's able to do it, you know, no problem. Yeah, father's protecting. But even then, somehow or other, it's so difficult, right? Because you have to completely give up all control and have full faith that this person will catch you, and you kind of realize that how difficult it is to place full faith in someone, full trust. How much we hold back on our faith. How much we hold back. I mean, really, I'd encourage you, try it with someone you like. Right? It's so difficult.
If you don't like to fall, you do another way too. You get blindfolded and start walking.
Yeah.
Well, this is actually blindfolded, some over.
Uh-oh. Yeah. Right. So Krishna's like that. Sometimes he stands right behind us, you know, and says, "Come," you know, and we're not willing to do it, you know, but he's there. So he increases our faith in this way. So this is the point. Plan. Prabhupada says, a devotee does not make plans. Kind of an absolute statement. And you think, my God, how is that possible? But it's true, devotee does not make plans. But it doesn't mean that he has no plans. Right? The point is, he doesn't make the plans. Someone's making the plans. Right? It doesn't mean that there are no plans in devotee. You look at Srila Prabhupada's life. He had a plan his whole life. Right? That one day I will go to the West to preach Krishna consciousness. It took him 70 years to execute that plan. But it wasn't his plan. It was his spiritual master's plan. It was Krishna's plan. And he was trying to figure out, how can I best fall into Krishna's plan? And this point of it not being an easy thing, you just look at his life. When the first year he came to New York City, everything was going wrong. Just what we're talking about. Right? Everything went wrong. He didn't have a place to live. The place he was living in, the roommate kicked him out, tried to kill him, tried to stab him. He was homeless. Whatever little things he had, he came to America with a typewriter, with a couple boxes of cereal, and a trunk of books. Right? And within a year of his staying in New York City, he was robbed clean. Everything gone. Imagine, a 70-year-old man with only his own clothing in the middle of New York in winter. He arrived in winter. I think he arrived in September or October. Winter, right? Very soon. No follow, nothing. Srila Prabhupada, you know, many people don't realize this, but he would go every week back to the pier, back to the harbor where the ships came, and check times for return ships back to India. Maybe not every week, maybe once a month. But he would go regularly to go to check. From the time he arrived to in that whole first year period, and he says, should I go back? It's not working, nothing's working. Not a single follower, no support, no money, no one to help. Maybe I should go back. And again, they're saying a difficult thing, right? You can imagine what a difficult thing. Normally, in those circumstances, what would we conclude? We think it's not Krishna's plan. Right? If it was Krishna's plan, why would everything be going so wrong? Right? Why would I get robbed? Why would I get attempt? You know, why would there be an attempt at my life? Why would I be homeless like this? Why would no one come to help? It's definitely not Krishna's plan. Right? That's generally, I think, what we would conclude, isn't it? If things go so wrong, we think this is not God's plan. But we see God had a very, very different plan. Right? How can you tell? It's not easy. That's why complete dependence on Krishna is required. Complete dependence. Prabhupada would check the return times and almost just as frequently, he'd go to the embassy and try to get his visa extended. Right? Both things were happening. He was checking on when I can go back and trying to get his visa extended. In other words, he was saying, let's see what Krishna's plan is. Maybe I'll have to go back, maybe I'll have to see. Let's see what happens. But one thing was fixed in his mind, that I have the order of my spiritual master. That's the only kind of thing that was made clear in Krishna's plan. Nothing else was made clear. There's one thing that was solid, is that I received an order. That part of the plan was clear. So let me use that and see how far I can get. And in the end, Krishna gave him success. Krishna revealed his plan. But it took a full year of complete struggle, complete homelessness, aloneness, bad health, winter time, everything. So our struggles in life, you know, we can never know. It can be part of Krishna's plan. We should never get disheartened that perhaps maybe Krishna's not there, Krishna's not helping. Krishna's not, Krishna doesn't have a plan for me. He kind of forgot. You know, sometimes you can feel like that. So I got left out of the plan somehow. Krishna's got a plan everywhere, and my paper fell through the cracks or something. He forgot to make a plan for me. No, that's never the case. That's never the case. If we feel like we're in free fall, Krishna might be there at the bottom, waiting. Right? But we've got to get to the bottom somehow. We have to go through that whole journey, that worry of falling, that whole time of faith. Yeah, and that can only be attributed to a lack of faith,
yeah.
A lack of trust. Yeah. See, that kind of leads us to the final aspect of this plan thing, and that's, okay, so we understand we have to work for Krishna's plan, but how to figure out Krishna's plan, right? How to find out what it is. And for that, as you're saying, the process has been given, right? The method has been given. The whole purpose of whatever we do, right? Chanting, hearing, discussing Bhagavad Gita, coming to serve at the temple, attending aarti, doing kirtan, eating prasadam. The whole purpose of this process, right, is that by doing this, we tune ourselves into Krishna's plan. Right now we're out of tune. And the way to tune ourselves into Krishna's plan is to say Krishna's all pure. Krishna's got a purified vision, a selfless vision. And we're in this impure condition. As we purify ourselves, we can see Krishna's plan much better. We kind of, we're in the same wavelength of Krishna. It's like finding that radio station. So the whole process of hearing and chanting, Shravanam and Kirtanam, chanting the holy name, doing our japa, leading a pure life, following the four regulative principles, this is all a matter of adjusting our wavelength. We all become pure enough where we're able to pick up on Krishna's messages. Krishna's playing his flute, and that flute has the plan in it. For Brahma, the plan was there. Brahma was in tune with Krishna's flute. He could tune into that wavelength. And he heard the whole plan for the entire creation, this entire universe, what to do. That's a big plan Krishna had for him. Everything, how to create. He heard it and he executed it. We too have to tune in. Krishna's flute is blowing, it's got the plan for us. But we cannot hear it until we're polluted by material desires, until we've got these selfish desires, we've got pride and false ego. So we chant Krishna's holy names, we hear Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, we engage in service at the temple, we see the form of the deity, we associate with devotees, we eat prasad. And all this tunes us in, we become purified, and we can gradually pick up on Krishna's plan more and more and more. Okay. So good place to end. Thank you very much for your attention. Thank you. Prabhupada ki jai.